On this week's edition of New York Now, COVID-19 deaths reach a new low, and Governor Andrew Cuomo says he's ending his daily briefings.
We're going to turn the page on the immediacy of this crisis.
Then we'll turn our attention to deaths at nursing homes during the COVID-19 crisis. Assembly Republican leader Will Barclay wants a new probe into the state's handling of nursing homes. And Stephen Hance, who leads a statewide group representing nursing homes, offers his perspective. Plus, Suffolk County Executive Steve Ballone calls on Congress to help the state's counties, and Karen DeWitt has the news of the week. I'm Dan Clark, and this is New York Now.
Today, the Senate majority
Welcome to this week's edition of New York Now. I'm Dan Clark. It's the end of an era. Governor Andrew Cuomo said this week that he will no longer deliver daily briefings on the coronavirus. But more than 3 months after the first case was diagnosed in New York, people still have questions. Chief among them is the state's handling of nursing homes. At one point, New York required nursing homes to accept COVID-positive patients to free up hospital beds for others. Cuomo said this week that the state was just following orders from the federal government.
If they want to start with an analysis of in retrospect, start with the first fact. Why did the federal government give that guidance to states? That's the only relevant question if you want to go down that road.
That's a claim that was scrutinized this week by fact checkers. With me now to discuss that and more is Karen DeWitt from New York State Public Radio. Karen, thanks for being here as always.
Sure thing.
So Karen, PolitiFact rated the governor's claim that he was relying on the CDC guidance to force nursing homes to accept COVID-positive patients as mostly false. And their reasoning is basically that the CDC really never said that. They were never forcing that standard upon the state. I sent this article to you earlier in the week. I'm curious to get your take on it, since this has been something that the governor has repeated several times over the last, month, I would say, since we started pressuring him on that.
Well, Cuomo's been largely praised for his handling of the whole COVID crisis, but the nursing homes, he's drawn a lot of criticism for his handling of that. I mean, 6,000 residents died, and there was this March 25th directive that the nursing homes had to take the patients. And I think the governor was fighting the last war, frankly. He was worried about what happened in Italy. The hospitals were overrun, and he didn't want New York's hospitals overrun. So he wanted to clear those hospital beds any way that he could. And in retrospect, perhaps allowing these patients back was not a good idea. I mean, it goes to the larger issue of the nursing homes not being well regulated. The staff there, a lot of them are very low paid. They're vulnerable to the virus. Perhaps they brought in the virus as well. So it was just a very bad situation. And the CDC did say, yes, it's a good idea to take these nursing home patients back, but the nursing homes have to be prepared. They have to know how to handle it and isolate the virus. And, it looks like that didn't happen at all.
Speaking of Cuomo receiving praise for his handling of the coronavirus, he said this week that he is ending his daily briefings. We've had them since March. I don't know about you, but I actually found myself a little sad that this wasn't going to be happening anymore.
Yeah, hard to believe because, yes, as reporters, sometimes, we wouldn't see the governor for months. Now we've seen him for 110 days. I think you, Dan, went to every single briefing in Albany,
just
right?
Just about, yeah.
I went to slightly more than half of them. And it's true. They kind of anchored our day. And it does seem like an end of an era. I have to say, the things that the governor was criticized for in the past, his weaknesses being very controlling. In fact, he would even tell you that he's a bit of a control freak. His reliance on just a few inner staff for all his decisions, that's what became the strengths in this crisis, because you couldn't wait for a bureaucracy to move. You had to make decisions quickly. You had to be obsessed with detail, and you had to make sure that it happened right away. So all of a sudden, all these things that were viewed as his weaknesses were his strengths, and he just became the right person really to handle this crisis. I don't think there's too much disagreement about that.
Also this week, Senate Republican leader John Flanagan, we knew that he wasn't going to be coming back because he's not seeking re-election, but he had a surprise announcement this week that he's leaving June 28th, and that means that Republicans in the Senate are going to have to pick a new leader. Any predictions, Karen?
Well, we do know that there are two Western New Yorkers in the running, Senator Patrick Gallivan, the former Erie County Sheriff, Senator Rob Ort, the former mayor of North Tonawanda. But somebody has to lead, and I think these two Western New York senators want to do it. They'll give it some more blood. I think they're a little bit more conservative, a little maybe more Trumpian, or might, let's say they might agree with some of the views of President Trump more than Senator John Flanagan, who is more of a moderate from Long Island. So that may change the tenor of what we hear coming out of the Senate Republicans in the future.
All right, Karen DeWitt from New York State Public Radio, always a pleasure to start the show with you.
Thanks.
Turning back now to nursing homes, nearly a quarter of the state's 24,000 COVID-19 deaths have been linked to nursing homes. And everyone's looking for somebody to blame. The state health department is looking into whether there was any wrongdoing on the part of nursing homes themselves. I asked Health Commissioner Howard Zucker this week for an update.
We've had an incredible number of inspections into all of the nursing homes, in the hundreds. Whenever there's an issue, we raise this, we go in there, we do whatever is necessary, and take all to the fullest extent of the law, do what we have to do to make sure the individuals in those nursing homes are safe.
But someone outside probe into whether choices made by the state actually made things worse at nursing homes. That includes Assembly Republican leader Will Barclay, who says the legislature should also get involved. He spoke with me earlier this week about that and last week's package of police reforms. Assembly Republican leader Will Barclay, thanks so much for being here on New York Now this week. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, Dan.
Anytime. So I want to talk to you about two things primarily. First, nursing homes during COVID-19, and then the package of police reforms passed last week in the legislature. So in terms of nursing homes, we know now that about one in every four COVID-19 deaths were related to a nursing home in some way. And you're part of a group of people that have said that some of those deaths could have been prevented. Tell me how.
Yeah, well, it was really tragic. We had 6,000, so far we've had 6,000 nursing home deaths. That's out of a nursing home population, about 100,000 people in nursing homes. So it really has been a tragic situation. As you know, the governor came out with an executive order back, I think it was March 25th, that required nursing homes to take COVID-positive patients. And a lot of people question that. Why are we, you know, allowing COVID-positive patients into nursing homes? And as a result, the virus spread terribly in those homes. So I think, you know, first of all, I'm glad he rescinded that order. He did it 3 weeks after he issued it. But I think we ought to have hearings on this. The legislature now has been back. We've had two sessions. We've had several public hearings. But we have to look in to see why. What was the purpose of the Department of Health in New York that put this order down? The governor says he was just following CDC guidelines. But that's been ruled by, I guess, third parties, so that's not necessarily accurate. The CDC said, you know, they may allow COVID, but they don't have to. And the governor's order said they had to. And it really resulted in some real tragic results. Obviously, 6,000 deaths. We look at Florida that did not have that same rule. And even California, I guess, started with that rule, but pulled back. And as a result, they had a much lower death rate in nursing homes in New York.
So in terms of an investigation by the legislature, we already have an investigation into this, not that specific part of the directive, but into nursing homes in general by the Department of Health and the Attorney General's office. They're doing a joint investigation on this. Tell me why the legislature should be taking a hand in this and kind of taking control and looking at it from their perspective.
Well, I'm certainly happy the AG is involved, but I think we need to have an independent, where it's a co-equal branch of government, and it's time for the legislature to step up and do it. I wouldn't mind having other investigations, too. I don't think this could minimize the number of investigations. Obviously, we don't want to go crazy on it, but obviously, the Department of Health, having them do some sort of investigation is a little bit, conflict of interest. As a result, it's an executive branch agency, and it needs to be outside the executive branch. And I'm not saying the AG couldn't have an unbiased, but she's obviously a political ally of the governor, and I think it'd probably be cleaner to have a transparent hearings on this. And if that uncovers stuff, certainly the AG or another law enforcement agency can go in and look at that. I'm not saying there's anything criminally done, but certainly an investigation or hearings could indicate where wrong, you know, something went wrong. And hopefully, God forbid, if the COVID starts back up or anything else, we don't repeat that terrible mistake that was made this time.
Do you think, looking at this, that any of the blame falls on nursing homes at all? We have several around the state. Obviously, when a COVID case gets into a nursing home and there aren't necessary protections, it's going to spread like wildfire. Do you think that there is anything that nursing homes could have done differently?
Again, let's have a hearing and find out. There may be blame on nursing homes, but it seems a lot is really directed at this executive order that was pushed out by the Department of Health that really started this whole thing rolling, unfortunately.
So that executive order is a result of powers that the legislature gave the governor in early March. It's been 3 months now since the legislature handed him emergency powers, basically giving him the ability to make law, suspend laws, do what the legislature would usually function as. With COVID deaths so low now, we're in the 30s this week, and with hospitalizations down at such a low level, do you think it's time for those emergency powers to be rescinded to avoid situations like we saw with the nursing homes?
Yeah, we've been calling for that for some time. The legislature now, as I said, has been back for two sessions, 2 weeks. We did it at the end of May and early June. And we've had hearings, and we can show that we can operate remotely. So it seems to me it's time to pull back on the governor's powers, whether we do it completely or do it, a little bit by little bit. And it's not just because the governor's, exercises power. It's also because we have some massive issues, I think, that are coming up, particularly budgetarily. And I think the legislature, we're all elected by our constituents. We have a very strong and important role to play in deciding how money is spent and revenues received. And I think the legislature ought to play a role in that. So it is time, in my mind. We gave them all the way until, I think, April 2021. And that, at the time when we passed it, we didn't know what to expect. But now we have a better feel for things. Certainly, it seems to me it's time to reel back in some of that power. After all, we live in supposedly a democracy here in New York State. We don't want a one-person rule going on forever.
In the instance of if there is a second wave of this virus, God forbid, we don't want to see that, obviously, but if there is a second wave and the legislature decides to hand the governor the keys again, is there anything the legislature can do in the meantime to limit those powers, to prevent a situation like how we saw in nursing homes?
Well, quite frankly, when we first passed it, our conference, the minority conference in the assembly, did try to put some sort of guardrails on that power. We would have liked to have seen it for a lot less time. I mean, that would be an easy one, not doing a whole year, but maybe a couple months or weeks even. But also having regular reporting requirements to the legislature was a hostile amendment we put forth back in March when we did this initially. It was unfortunately voted down by the majority. But I think there's all sorts of things we could do just to limit the power. He's taken this power and he's really run with it. And some of them are very legitimate. Other things I would question, whether they were appropriate or not. So there's definitely guardrails you could put on it. And I think hopefully the legislature, both Democrat and Republican, learned our lesson. And going forward, we maybe not do it exactly the same way as we did it back in March.
So let's shift to the police reform package or changes in policing package, depending on how you view it, that was passed by the legislature last week. There were a lot of changes. We won't go over all of them in detail, but tell me from your perspective, because some of these issues were partisan, others passed with almost unanimous support. Do you think that changes needed to be made to the way that police operate in New York? And what did you think of the package overall that was passed last week?
I've said many times that bad facts make bad law. And that we have to be very careful, not rush to, make changes that necessarily wouldn't have addressed the George Floyd incident or any other perceived or actual abuses from the police. So the package was interesting. I think there was quite a few bills, maybe 10, 11 bills. Our conference was split on a lot of them. I voted for some I didn't. Many I thought went too far. But the one thing I always urge in these situations, and we saw particularly with bail reform, that you have to involve the people on the front lines, and in this case, obviously, in both cases, law enforcement. And sometimes I don't think, even though they're the focus, particularly on these set of bills, I think they have to be consulted, and it has to be done on a consensus basis, not just kind of run and get things done. And so some of those bills I thought were more problematic than others, but some I think we can agree on. And obviously reform, we always should be open to reform. If we can make the system better, so be it. That's what we should do as in government.
All right. Thank you so much, Assembly Republican Leader Will Barclay, for being on New York Now this week. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
It feels like everyone is searching for someone to blame for the number of people killed by COVID-19 in New York. When it comes to nursing homes, some say they didn't do enough to stop the disease from spreading within their facilities. But nursing home leaders say that's just not true and that there were factors that no one saw coming. This week, I spoke with Stephen Hantz. He leads the New York State Health Facilities Association, a group that represents nursing homes. Stephen, thanks for being here on New York Now this week. I appreciate it.
Dan, thank you for having me.
So you lead a group that represents several nursing homes around the state, and nursing homes are a hot topic during COVID-19, obviously. I feel like everybody is trying to blame somebody for the thousands of deaths at nursing homes. Some people are pointing their fingers at the state. Some people are saying it was the nursing homes themselves. And I get it, because families are going through a lot right now, losing their loved ones. Walk me through what happened here with nursing homes in particular.
Really, what we are dealing with as the nation and the state prepared to deal with this pandemic as it presented itself on our shores, first in Washington and then in New York, was really the focus on hospitals and a lot of the perspective of we need to ramp up hospital rooms and hospital capacity, which made sense. So as this virus presented itself into our state, and nursing homes and assisted living providers really advocated to have equal priority with hospitals for PPE, for staffing, for testing, and we were dealing with a confluence of issues. We were dealing with a highly contagious virus that knew no boundaries. We were dealing with staffing issues because what we had here, the first time ever, we had schools closing and staff had to care for their children. And that presented significant issues. So we had those issues. Then we had staff becoming ill. And this is all when we were going into COVID-19, we were dealing with circumstances where New York was experiencing a healthcare workforce crisis. And then we had shortages of PPE. Personal protective equipment, and really trying to get masks and face shields and gowns and things of that nature. Fundamentally, though, Dan, was the recognition, and we learned this later through the virus, that over 25% of individuals infected with COVID-19 are asymptomatic. And really, that presented a significant issue in nursing homes, assisted living facilities throughout the state and throughout the nation.
So the state at the end of March issued this directive that said that nursing homes couldn't discriminate against COVID-19 positive patients, meaning that nursing homes had to accept these patients into their facilities. Do you think that was a mistake? Do you think that the state should have kept COVID positive patients out of nursing homes?
The March 25th guidance from the State Department of Health was intended to deal with hospital surge situations, exigent situations where hospitals were running out of beds and they needed to provide a placement for patients who needed care who couldn't return to the community. I think at that time when that guidance was issued, providers presented a lot of concerns because at that point in time, many providers had to date not had COVID enter their buildings. It was never an issue of whether or not the nursing home could care for those patients. It was an issue where the nursing home could not either request that patient be tested or refuse admission to a patient that was presenting symptoms and not being tested. So it raised real concerns, but nevertheless, those patients, as a consequence of that Department of Health directive, came into nursing homes. And quite frankly, we cared for them, we provided care for them. And as we went through this pandemic, we cohorted those positive patients away from non-positive patients. And really, as we gained access to PPE and as we gained testing access, we really learned, working in partnership with the Department of Health, with the state, how to care for those individuals who are positive and really safeguard the negative residents from contracting COVID and really cohorting those patients away from each other.
All right, Stephen Hance from the New York State Health Facilities Association, thanks so much for being here. This is a perspective that I think is hugely important to this conversation about COVID-19.
Dan, thank you very much for having me.
The county with the highest number of nursing home deaths has been Suffolk County on Long Island. And that's not a surprise. Outside New York City, Suffolk has had the second highest number of coronavirus cases in the state. But as the virus slows, Suffolk is trying to rebuild, and that's been hard to imagine. The county is now projecting more than $1 billion in losses through the end of 2022. And Suffolk County Executive Steve Blone says without help from the federal government, they're running out of options. I spoke with him earlier this week. County Executive Blone, thanks so much for being here on New York Now. We really appreciate you being here.
It's great to be with you, Dan. Thank you.
So every county of the state is going to take some sort of financial hit from COVID-19. We know that because of revenue losses, but Suffolk County, your county, is in a really unique position because a lot of your economy comes from tourism and revenue because you're a tourist destination. At the same time, not everybody's going to be able to pay their property taxes this year. Tell me what that means for the future of your county right now, looking into the immediate future.
Well, county governments are in many ways largely reliant on the sales tax, which is very responsive to any issues with the economy. So when we see a recession, downturns, county governments get impacted. The property tax is a much more stable tax, but we are likely to see some impact there as well. But because we're so reliant on the sales tax, something like this, an unprecedented event in which the response was essentially to shut down the economy, the numbers that we're looking at are cataclysmic. They're not numbers you see in a downturn. It's literally falling off a cliff. We had a group of independent municipal finance experts do an analysis, and we're looking at anywhere from a $1.1 to $1.5 billion budget hole.
The governor is also warning that without federal aid to the state level, he might have to make cuts to local governments as much as 20%. How does that play into this? Have your projections considered that, or is that something down the line that you're also going to have to deal with in figuring out what you're going to do moving forward?
Well, I think that's exactly right. If the state does not get relief, that is going to trickle down to us as well and cause impacts there. So we need state and local governments to get relief. We were one of the hardest hit places anywhere in the country. And from my perspective, this really is no different than another natural disaster as if we had gotten hit by, say, a Category 5 hurricane. The only difference would be that this hurricane stayed for 2 months instead of passing over in 24 hours. The federal government, of course, is going to respond in that kind of crisis, we assume. And I expect that to happen here. And that's why we've really been working with our federal representatives. We need them to deliver at this moment in crisis, because if that federal relief does not come, what we are looking at is essentially a hollowing out of the government, the level of government here, county governments, that deliver public health, social services, health services, and public safety. And I don't think anyone believes that we can afford to do that as we just begin this recovery, which is going to take years.
Let's look at a worst case scenario that you kind of just laid out. A worst case scenario of this would be that you don't get any federal funding and you get those cuts from the state and you're losing all the sales tax revenue and it's just a perfect storm. What do you do as county executive in your county government? How do you move forward as a government?
We send billions more to Washington every year from Long Island. We do that as a state, as a whole. It is in the national interest that we recover quickly, not over the next decade, that we recover as quickly as possible. But without that federal relief, you're talking about really gutting out this government. And this will be the case across governments across the state because the resources aren't there. The revenues simply are not there. And I think that would be something that dramatically extends the pain and the devastation that has occurred already to people, and it's something that we can't afford to see happen.
Before I let you go, I want to ask you about nursing homes in Suffolk County. You had the most nursing home deaths of any county in the state. Obviously, you had more COVID-19 deaths in general than a lot of counties in the state. Why do you think that nursing home deaths were so concentrated in Suffolk County? And was there anything that could have prevented that from happening, in your opinion?
Well, we were not aware, I think, right from the start, because of a lack of testing, that the virus was already here. Our first case really came out of a nursing home. That's the first positive case in the county. And at that time, we were still tracing, because this is the information we're receiving from the federal government through the state health department, that we were contact tracing people coming from China. The reality is we know now that the virus had already spread throughout the county. We just didn't know it because there hadn't been any testing at that point. And so when that virus is coming into a nursing home where you have a group of the most, literally the most vulnerable people to the virus, older residents, but also people with underlying medical conditions, obviously that's going to have a devastating impact. The state came in, protocols were put in place. We were communicating with our nursing homes on a daily basis, but it's just a tragic, tragic circumstance that this virus ruthlessly attacks that generation and our nursing homes suffered as a result. But I know many of them were working right from the beginning to implement those state protocols. But we will see. I think we'll look back on this and see what could have been done better moving forward.
All right. We will leave it there. Suffolk County Executive Steve Ballone, thanks so much for being here this week.
Thanks. Great to be with you, Dan.
We have to leave it there, but thanks for watching this week's New York Now. Have a great week and be well.